Chapter 39. LNG Carrier at a depth of 160 feet. Kurt opened the watertight door to the control sphere with deliberate caution. There was no hiss of air, which told him the two spheres were kept at equal pressure, and that there was also no one directly on the other side. He stepped through onto the same type of metal grating that had been used in the docking sphere. Ahead of him stood racks of equipment and machinery, all connected by a maze of pipes that ran overhead. Pumps and cooling units could be heard humming, while a stack of the orange and gray fuel cells he'd seen on Tessa's plane ran along the left side of the sphere. "No shortage of power," he whispered. Near the fuel cells was a control area, with a wall of gauges and a computer screen displaying a diagram of the liquids and gas flowing through the pipes and the various valves. On the far side, he saw a pair of large vats and several dozen tanks stacked up in racks. The tanks were long and cylindrical, like those used at gas stations to hold propane. Because the space was a near-perfect sphere, sounds echoed at them from every direction. Footsteps, valves opening and closing, voices. Someone on the far side dropped a tool, and the sound reverberated around the sphere multiple times. Kurt took a path to the left, moved behind the nearest rack of equipment, and continued forward, slowing to listen to an echoing voice. This. Pressure at 105.05.05. Primary vat ready for transfer. A loud bang sounded as a valve was thrown open, and the echo circled them half a dozen times, drowning out the odd bits of conversation. Kurt glanced through a gap in the machinery. Volk and Miar were at the console near the wall of gauges in the center of the room. They appeared to be having a heated discussion. "Ever been to Statuary Hall?" Kurt whispered, leaning close to Joe's ear. Joe grinned. "You're thinking of John Quincy Adams." Kurt nodded. Rumor had it, he would pretend to sleep at his desk while eavesdropping on his opponents as their voices echoed off the domed ceiling. "If we can find the right spot, we might be able to overhear everything Volk and Miar are saying." "Great idea," Joe said. "We'll cover more ground if we split up." "You go that way," Kurt said. "I'll go this way. Keep an eye on the hatch. If anyone heads for the submarine, we need to beat them to it." Joe nodded and walked off. Kurt went in the opposite direction, grabbing a clipboard from a hook and carrying it with him. He wandered from one section of equipment to the next, passing the bank of fuel cells. The acoustics were such that he reached one spot where the machinery noise was amplified and painful to hear. A few feet away, it was almost completely silent. He moved in closer to propane-style tanks. Each was labeled to hold 500 gallons of liquefied gas. Oddly, the tanks were hot to the touch. Wandering among them, pretending to check the gauges, Kurt counted 40 tanks in all, stacked too high on a scaffold and connected to one another by copper pipes, some of which led back to the large vats. "We need more storage, storage, storage." The words came out of nowhere, but with a French accent. It had to be Miar. "Pressure getting too high, high, high." Kurt moved to the right, heard less, and then moved back to the left. "I don't have time to wait around, around, around." Kurt assumed the second voice was Volk's. He crouched down as if looking more closely at one of the gauges and found the sweet spot. "That petrol truck was supposed to be used for siphoning off the gas," Miar said. 9,000 liquefied gallons of it. "We are far beyond safe storage down here already. If you fill it with bacterial cultures instead, this whole production facility would be in danger of shutting down, or worse, blowing up." "Relieve the pressure another way," Volk said. "Vent some of the gas into the sea if you have to." "It reacts with water," Miar reminded him. "You might as well send up a flare telling the whole world we're down here." The argument ended, and Kurt checked the orange-faced Doxa watch on his wrist. They'd spent 6 of the 11 minutes they had before needing a decompression stop on the way up. Time to go. Kurt moved back the way he'd come. But another crewman was heading his way. He veered off and took the stairs onto a catwalk that allowed for inspection of the second level of the stacked tanks. The catwalk took him around the back half of the sphere, the long way around. He moved quickly, glancing at the gauges on the tanks as he went. Every pressure reading was in the red. The needles on some of the gauges had already crossed the max pressure line. No wonder Miara was worried. He was working in a room with 40 ticking bombs. At the far end of the catwalk, Kurt reached a second stairway and made his way down. At almost the same moment, two men came past one of the large pumps and stepped onto the stairway, coming up toward him. It was Kurt's intention to pass them with a polite nod, but the nearest of the two had his eyes locked onto Kurt. "What are you doing up here?" he asked. "This area is off limits to..." "Checking the pressure," Kurt said, pointing to the clipboard. Kurt saw the lack of recognition in his eyes. With a crew of only 12, every face was familiar. "Who are you?" Kurt acted instantly, jamming the clipboard into the man's chest, shoving him backward and down the stairs. "Intruder!" the second crewman shouted. "We have an intruder!" Kurt slugged him and sent him sprawling, but the alarm had been raised. Volk and several others rushed toward them. Kurt couldn't punch his way through them all. He raced back up the stairs and along the catwalk, but two men appeared on the far end with oversized wrenches in their hands. Both groups closed in, and Kurt leapt over the railing, jumping down between the cylindrical tanks and rushing for the exit. It was not to be. Volk jumped from the catwalk and tackled Kurt with a flying leap. The two men rolled to the ground, got up simultaneously, and charged at each other. Grasping Volk's arm with one hand, Kurt threw an uppercut toward Volk's jaw. The punch connected, but only with a glancing blow as Volk turned his face away. A brief separation allowed Volk to throw a counterpunch. Kurt ducked, but was forced on the defensive as Volk pulled out a hunting knife. He slashed at Kurt once, cutting through the overalls Kurt had stolen, then lunged forward with a much more dangerous stabbing motion. Kurt caught Volk's arm and bent it back, but Volk spun free, turned, and forced Kurt to retreat farther. "Miar!" Volk shouted. "Get some more crewmen down here!" Kurt knew he was trapped, but he also knew that the more men who came to subdue him, the less remained out in the sphere to discover Joe. He planned on prolonging the fight for as long as his body could take it. Another crewman moved into the maze of tanks. A third came in behind Volk. Kurt feinted one way, got them moving to intercept him, then dove over a set of crossfeed pipes that led to the next tank. Hitting the ground, he rolled, sprang up and dashed forward, disappearing behind the next row. Volk moved slowly. There was no need to rush. He had 6 men working with him surrounding the area. "Spread out," Volk said. "Push him toward the back wall." Kurt kept quiet, moving from one hiding place to the next. The acoustics of the sphere and the industrial lighting mixed with dark shadows made it easy to hide and change position. But he would run out of room in a moment. In need of a weapon, he glanced around but saw nothing that could help him. "Who are you?" Volk called out. "How did you get in here?" Kurt said nothing. "Don't be shy," Volk said. "Surely you want to boast about how you found us. If ever there's a time to brag, this is it. You won't be able to talk much after I've cut your throat." Kurt moved again, but was now coming up on the back end of the sphere, with only one more row of cylinders between him and the wall. Instead of going back, he climbed up onto one of the tanks and lay flat, squeezing between the first layer of tanks and the second. He began to sweat instantly. Both tanks were hot to the touch, a sure sign that they were overpressurized. The heat wasn't scalding, but it was close enough to walking on blacktop in the Arizona sun that he didn't look forward to remaining longer than necessary. One of Volk's men walked past him. Another passed by in the next row over. If they would just keep on moving. The beam of a flashlight passed over Kurt. "Over there," someone shouted. "Between the tanks." Kurt looked up to see a man on the catwalk. He'd been spotted from above. Without delay, Kurt pushed out from between the tanks and dropped to the floor, where he was instantly surrounded. One man swung a pipe wrench at Kurt's head, but Kurt ducked and it clanged noisily off the tank beside him. Kurt kneed the man in the stomach and then clubbed his wrist. The man cried out and dropped the wrench to the floor, pulling back and clutching his hand protectively. Kurt grasped at the wrench, but someone grabbed him and pulled him back. A second man joined in, and Kurt's arms were soon pinned. With the two men restraining Kurt, a third crewman rushed forward. "Hold him up," the new arrival shouted. "I'll knock him out." The captors hoisted Kurt to his feet and a mighty punch was thrown. But it missed Kurt completely and cold-cocked one of the crew. The man fell to the ground like a sack of rice while his partner looked on in shock. His expression changed as Kurt pulled loose, gut-punched him, and slammed him headfirst into one of the storage tanks. "Thanks for the assist," Kurt said to Joe. "But I was keeping them busy so that you could escape." "And swim back all on my own?" Joe said. "I prefer the buddy system." "That's not going to help us much now," Kurt said. He plucked the oversized pipe wrench off the floor, took a step forward, and stopped. Two of the men who'd captured Kurt were out of the fight, but Volk and the rest of the crew had surrounded them. It was now 6-2, with Miar and another crewman watching from the catwalk. "You'll never get out of here," Volk said. "Neither will you," Kurt replied. With a quick turn, he raised the heavy wrench and brought it down on one of the crossfeed pipes. It hit with a thunderous stroke, denting the pipe, bending it in the middle. Volk and his men froze in their tracks. "Don't!" Miar shouted, his shrill voice echoing around the room. "You'll kill us all!" "That's the general idea," Kurt shouted, lifting the wrench above his head. "I know what you've filled these tanks with. One more hit and we'll all be out of our misery, so back off." The rest of the crew moved backward, but Volk stepped forward with a smug grin on his face. "He's bluffing. Take one more step and you'll find out if that's true." Even Volk stopped now. "You don't really want to die here." "Who does?" Kurt replied. "But if it's between getting captured and killed by you and your men or blowing this ship to Kingdom Come and dying as a couple of heroes, well then I think you know which one of those I'm going to pick." Around Volk, the men started retreating. They were chemical engineers, former roughnecks, and people from other assorted backgrounds. They wanted nothing to do with Kurt and the dented pipe. Volk was different. He was a killer, and he hadn't gotten where he was by playing it safe. He regripped the knife and stepped forward. "And our options are life in prison, or charge you and test your mettle. I think you can imagine which one I'm going to pick." Kurt saw instantly that Volk was ready to die rather than give in. "So be it," Kurt said. He brought his arm down, slamming the pipe once again. Sparks flew, and everyone dove for cover. But there was no detonation, only a further bending of the pipe followed by a shrill whine as a tiny jet of high-pressure gas escaped from a pinprick-sized hole in the middle of the dent. Kurt didn't wait. He lunged in the other direction and dove for cover. Volk wasn't as lucky. He turned and dove, but was caught in the flash as the pipe blew itself apart, and the escaping gas morphed into a 12-foot jet of flame.